This episode of the Better Every Shift podcast is sponsored by The Fire Store. Learn more about getting the gear you need at prices you can afford by visiting thefirestore.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Better Every Shift podcast. My name is Aaron Zamzo. I am a fire lieutenant in Wisconsin, and I'm growing, learning, and trying to be better just like everybody else. I'm not alone today. This is a very special podcast. We termed it Zam Goes to the NFA and Doesn't Get Kicked Out, and actually gets welcomed back because I am so fortunate to have Eric Gablix with me, who is the superintendent of the National Fire Academy. And it's not to actually ask about my actions at the academy. It's to really promote the NFA. And I had such an unbelievable time, which we'll get into, that I invited Chief Gablix, because you've got over 30 years in the fire service, to just talk about it and our mission. And I'm joining his mission to get anyone who's listening to the NFA. But before we do that, I want to welcome Superintendent Gablix. Thank you for being here, sir. Have you recovered from the weekend?
Yeah, it's been a busy weekend, Zam, and thanks for having me. And you can call me Eric, so that's fine. I work for you and all the other career volunteer firefighters, EMS providers in the country. So we had a super busy weekend, a very busy Friday, Saturday. We had a lot of company on the campus, but yeah, got some sleep on Sunday. We're good to go.
And here we are talking about that. Let me give everybody, so if you don't know Eric's, you really need to. The look that he had on his face throughout the weekend was like a kid in the candy store. And I had the same look. And a lot of people that were there did that. And we'll talk about that. But you've been the superintendent of the National Fire Academy since 2020. You started as a volunteer in New Jersey. I mentioned you've been in the fire service for over 30 years. In 1991, you joined the Oregon Department of Public Safety and Standards and Training, which operates the Oregon Public Safety Academy. You served as that agency director for 10 years from 2010 to 2020. You're the past president of the North American Fire Training Directors. You have a ton of experience. You've experienced the NFA from a lot of different sides, both as a participant, now as the superintendent. And I'll tell you, Eric, you did a heck of a job, because I'm sold. I can't wait to get back there. But where does this passion for the NFA for you, where did it all begin?
Well, the NFA, it started with my connection really being a volunteer fire officer in New Jersey with the Adelphia Fire Company in Howell Township, which is in Monmouth County, Central Jersey. So the National Fire Academy brought a class, a two-day weekend class, to the Monmouth County Fire Academy. I signed up to go. I thought it was a very good class. Then a friend of mine, we're going through Ocean County Community College, And he said, Barry Oljars from Jackson Mills says, hey, I'm going to go to a state weekend in Emmitsburg at the NFA. Do you want to go? And I said, I've never been to the NFA. What should I do? And he goes, basically sign up, register, and then you and I can carpool out, because it's about a 2.5 hour, 3 hour drive. And let's go take some classes. So I went with him. And that was a state weekend opportunity, which is a 2 day National Fire Academy class. Really focused on a number of the different topics, but it was focused in that case on leadership. And then that was kind of my hook. So once I went to campus, I realized what an amazing place it was, and an amazing in a couple of ways. One is that when you just come onto the campus and you drive off of the highway into the driveway, you realize the size and the scope of the campus. So it's over 200 acres. It's a historic campus. And by historic, I mean, it used to be St. Joseph's College. It was an all-girls college that about 50 years ago merged with Mount St. Mary's University up the road from us in Emmitsburg, Maryland. At the same time that that college merged, that campus was available. And some of your listeners who have done fire service history for their promotional exams may have read a book called America Burning. America Burning was co-authored by members of the fire service working with elected officials and identified steps that our country needed to take to address America's fire problem. So we were seeing thousands of civilian fire deaths every year, hundreds of firefighter deaths every year, thousands of firefighter injuries. So what America Burning did is, in essence, was a call to action to our elected officials and to the fire service that we need to do something. So through collective efforts, the fire service has done a great job of reducing civilian fire deaths, but still approximately 3,000 a year, which is way too many. And as we know from our data analysis, a lot of those fire fatalities are people from underrepresented communities. So people that don't have a working smoke alarm still today, people that live in housing that doesn't meet fire code. So we still have work to do in reducing those civilian fire deaths. On the flip side, we talk about firefighter deaths and injuries through our collective efforts through the work of National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. And you see you're wearing their hat. We have collectively changed the culture of the American Fire Service, and we now know more than ever before through research funded through assistance to firefighter grants about the risks that our firefighters wear. So thankfully, we're not seeing the hundreds of firefighter line of duty deaths and the thousands of injuries, but we still are seeing approximately 100 deaths every year of our brothers and sisters in the fire service and still seeing injuries. But again, through our collective efforts, that number has gotten lower. So the campus, as I mentioned, historic when you roll in, some of the buildings on our campus are pre-Civil War. So our campus, when the sisters ran the college, the Army of the Potomac stayed in Emmitsburg on the campus during the battle in Gettysburg. After that battle in Gettysburg, the chapel which you visited, which is now the National Fallen Firefighters Chapel, was used as the field hospital to treat both the injured from the north and the south. So when you look at the history, we were right there. What is equally important now, the purpose that we have, and I tie it into America Burning, within America Burning, the authors of that report said that our nation needed to have a professional development organization similar to our military war colleges. And not that we're developing soldiers, but they said that we should have a location, a school similar to what the military does to prepare our current and future leaders. And that school should be located in the Washington, D.C. area. And it'll be called the National Fire Academy. And ever since the federal government purchased that campus in Emmitsburg, we have been the National Emergency Training Center, the home of the National Fire Academy, which you experienced. And then also our partners joined us a few years later from FEMA Emergency Management Institute.
So somebody's listening right now. They're probably, and here's the thing that I want everybody to know about this. So I went out there, and it's not because I run a podcast and you and I have met before. And
yeah,
it's because I saw an email. You said, hey, sign up for this. It's the Executive Fire Officer Leadership Symposium. You don't have to be a fire officer. We want you out to Emmitsburg to experience the NFA. This was 2 days. And I think, oh, by the way, you paid for it. It was free for me to attend. And when I was there, I obviously the campus is unbelievable from a standpoint there. Everywhere you turn, you can't help be kind of there's just memories or memorials everywhere that helps really motivate, at least for me, it was help motivate me. But besides that, like somebody who's listening is like, well, I'm just a firefighter. I'm just a volunteer. And then listening to you and your passion, you know, what is your goal for the NFA? And you know, like you had mentioned it numerous times throughout the weekend, let's get it out there. Let's get the goal out there first. What is your personal goal?
Sure. My personal goal is that I would love to have everybody in the fire service at least visit the National Fire Academy once in their career. So we are serving 1.2 million career and volunteer fire and EMS providers from state, local, tribal, territorial fire departments. You could also add federal firefighters, military firefighters. Everyone should have the opportunity to experience the National Fire Academy at least once. What we know is that when you come once, you will come back. You will also tell your friends and those you're mentoring about the National Fire Academy. So when you hear the word academy, and I went through this when I left Oregon, because a lot of people had no idea that we had a National Fire Academy. We still have people in the American Fire Service that don't know we have a National Fire Academy. And at times, even the name Fire Academy is misleading, because when you hear National Fire Academy, you think of, oh my gosh, you must have, you know, hundreds of fire trucks there. You must have a 200-story burn building, right? And I'm being facetious, but they think Fire Academy is where we train firefighters, how to pull hose, how to, you know, stretch a line, how to apply a defibrillator. And that couldn't be further from the truth. The National Fire Academy's purpose is really as the nation's professional development experience for our firefighters. So we, by law, do not provide training that's locally available. So you're not going to come and get your fire officer one. You're not going to come and get your instructor one at the campus. You're going to get that from your local or your state training organization. What we are providing are niche classes that are not available locally. And you don't have to be a firefighter in uniform with a badge or sworn to come to the campus. You have to meet the requirements for that class. So I'll give you some examples. We offer community risk reduction classes. Yep. We used to call those fire prevention, but what we know is we're trying to prevent more than fire. That includes people wearing seatbelts, bicycle helmets, pool safety. So trying to mitigate those incidents that we don't need to go to if people can take care of things at home. So community risk reduction, we have a number of students in those classes that are non-sworn community risk reduction specialists who have a passion for that, who have never ridden a fire truck, and that's okay. They are welcome, as is the fire inspector who is also assigned to community risk reduction. If you switch gears, we offer classes for EMS, we offer incident management, fire investigations, fire plans review. We also have hazmat leadership classes and a number of others. So we offer about 75 different classes on campus, and those classes are repeated throughout the year. So much like a college catalog, we run 4 quarters each year, and we love to run hundreds of classes every quarter. So people just need to go online, Google National Fire Academy admissions, and they'll see our list of offerings on campus, and they can apply. The other thing is that we also offer, and this is how I started, off-campus classes. So mm-hmm. we reach about 8,000 students in Emmitsburg each year in resident classes. We reach about 25,000 students off campus, thanks to the amazing partnership we have with state fire training academies through the North American Fire Training Directors. So what we know, it's hard for people to get away for a week or 2 weeks, especially with staffing, right? We see staffing challenges across the country by filling vacant positions. So we know it's tough for somebody to get a week off or 2 weeks off. So what we do is a lot of export classes to the local state academies. So you could take a National Fire Academy class in Wisconsin. You could take a National Fire Academy class in Alaska, in Hawaii. And that gets us out there close to home because we know it's still far away for some people. So, you know, even if I pick a center part of a state, somebody's got to drive to get there. So our state training directors try to figure out where those best places are so we can fill those classes. And what we realize even more so is it's even tough for people to get away to a 2-day class. So we offer a dozen of classes in an online format as well. So we're pretty excited about the different options that we have. The one thing that we've also done over a number of years is realized that we have to also have a partnership with our academic institutions. So through a program we call FESHE, Fire and Emergency Services in Higher Education, we have a partnership at the National Fire Academy with more than 120 colleges and universities that offer both 2-year and 4-year degree programs for people interested in the fire and emergency services field. Those are all done off of a National Fire Academy template where our academic partners have set what that standard should look like for the 2-year, 4-year programs. So that gets students aware of what we do, and then that eventually brings them to campus when they get hired in the field, if they're not already working. And then we're also working on 2 different additions to FESHE. One is a master's degree program element. Mm-hmm. And then also, as we talk about recruiting or retention, having a high school program. You know, how do we get kids in high school thinking about opportunities, either as career or volunteer firefighters, EMS providers, through a high school curriculum? So that's that FESHE program. But again, collectively, we're reaching about 90,000 students here on and off campus. But what I'd love to do is reach even more.
And get them there, because you can't help but get recharged up there. But here's the kicker, everybody. Now, if you're thinking, I can't afford any of that stuff, Eric, address that, please.
Yeah, sure. So the National Fire Academy, we do not charge for anything that we offer on our campus or off campus. So the 2-day classes, the virtual classes are free of charge. The resident classes, we will, once you're accepted into a class, our admissions team will let you know you're in. And they'll give you instructions, but we will provide your lodging on campus. We will provide you world-class training. We will pick you up at Baltimore Washington International Airport with our buses, and we'll bring you to Emmitsburg. And then we will also reimburse you for your travel. So if you flew out, we'll reimburse you for your plane ticket. If you drove in, we'll reimburse you for your mileage if you're within the local area. And your cost is buying a meal ticket while you're on campus and giving us your time. So there's really no reason not to come. We've taken all the reasons that you wouldn't come off the table. So really, if you can cover the time and pick up your lunches or your meals, your dinner, you're in.
Yeah, and that's wait, you got to have a pub. Was it the recreation card? I think that's
we do. Yeah, much like a military post. You know what sets us apart, I think, from a lot of other places. And I'm very honest about this, being a state training director and working with our partners across the country. We have a number of very good academic institutions for fire service, EMS, professional development in the country. So by no means are we saying we're the only game in town. I know we're good at what we do based on the evaluations, but I'm also realistic that there are other programs that are just as good as us. But what sets us apart is the campus. We bring in people from not only across the United States, but also bring in international students as we can. So you will be in a class with 25 to 30 of your peers from across the country. And what we really do is embrace not only diversity, equity, inclusion, but also freedom of expression by you should be able to have tough discussions in our classrooms and share difficult discussions that you learn more about so you can go back to your agency and address those issues. And here's an example. If I brought a six-day leadership class to California or to Illinois, the people in that class are all going to be from California, Illinois. Somebody sitting next to somebody is going to know somebody else's chief, deputy chief, union president, etc. So the discussions will probably be chilled because they're not going to feel comfortable opening up and having those discussions that they really want to have so they can learn more. What the NFA does is kind of changes that landscape. So what I like to say is leave your badges at the door. So you may be a five bugle chief. You may be an assistant chief. You may be career. You could be volunteer. It really doesn't matter. You're all in that class because you want to learn from not only the facilitated discussion that we provide, but also learn from those lived experiences from everybody else in that classroom. So what we love is having people from really 25 states in that same room, learning the same facilitated discussion items, but having open discussion about, well, this is how California is dealing with that. This is what we've done in Illinois. This is what Florida is doing. So you create that not only safe place to have that discussion, but also you're making, in some cases, lifetime friends and peers that you could reach out to after you leave. So, you know, just think if you're in a group with 25 people, you set up a messaging board and you could send out a note to all of your classmates that you were just on campus with saying, my chief just asked me to create a policy on this. Has anybody else done this? And probably by the end of the day, you'll get responses from half of your classmates saying, we're working on that. We just did it. Here's our policy. Good luck. How can it be of assistance? So that network doesn't just happen on campus and in our classrooms, but we do also have the military bases do, if you will, an officers club. We call it the Command Post Pub, the recreation center. But we know that those discussions that we have in the classrooms occur over meals, but also may occur over a cold beverage. So we do have beer and wine on campus. We also have water and soda on campus. But a lot of times those discussions don't stop there and end up going into, you know, late hours of the evening at the pub.
Yep. And you do have a great, good workout facility. We're going to make it better.
Yeah.
And I know you have plans for that. There's a walking track. There is a gym for basketball. So that's another place. So by the way, this membership is $2, by the way. So that was my point. Like, cost should not be an issue. The meal I think that I paid for was like $100, but you got good meals. There was healthy choices. I was glad to see there's a salad bar there. We'll get into the ice cream machine, which, you know, of course.
And that, also gluten-free choices.
There were gluten-free choices. Yep. And there was always a good lean protein. There was always water available. Good coffee, of course. None of those things. So right now, anybody who's got, the food, good healthy food. There's workouts available. There is a little pub there. There is great bonding. There is reimbursement for tuition. So I'm trying to combat everybody's, you know, well, I can't do this. What about this? So far we got costs. It's off the table. Time, of course, you're trying to accommodate by bringing classes out to states. There are a couple online at your own pace courses. There are courses that are, you know, condensed symposium like we had with a leadership symposium, 2 days. There are like 4 or 5 day classes as well.
Yes, correct? Five day, 6 day, 10 day.
I do want to talk about the thing that you we're just touching on. You're going to learn unbelievable things. I am still trying to process all that I learned in just the short days. But what I thought was extraordinary was I was in a, you know, I was in a little shuttle. We went to maybe off campus. There was a nice event at Ott's Pub, of course. But I'm in a van with a five-star chief, like I'd say five-star chief, but Chief Muncy, who's got, you know, 79 stations. And next to me is a new paramedic, 3 years on the job from Pflugerville. And next to me there is Chief Josh Wallow from Bozeman. And then there was a volunteer up there, been in the fire service 20 years, wanted to just learn more, all in the same bus. And you know what? Everyone was talking together. Everyone was asking about, you know, their experiences and asking about, you know, family and just life in general. And then as we got to, you know, the pub there, which is an unbelievable experience as well, there was mentorship and there was there were conversations. And I got some great advice, just, you know, unsolicited. You're having conversations. And to me, it was just one of those things that I had to step back from being in this role. I'm just so grateful for the opportunities, but just to see the room and all the different people talking. Nobody knew each other when we came in on Thursday and Friday morning. And now on Saturday afternoon, everyone is exchanging their numbers and everyone's exchanging. In my LinkedIn, I think I just got 50 new, you know, connections. But that is the other invaluable piece. And you're exactly right that it doesn't matter. The brand new paramedic is going to have some trials and tribulations. And now he has his own network of people to reach out to say, what do I do about this? You know, that's not in their department. It's just an unbelievable part of that experience. If you were to just summarize like your top three things that someone would get from their first experience, what would you say?
Current and relevant information in the form of our training classes, the ability to have access to nationally recognized instructors who are all subject matter experts in your field, meaning that they have done the class that they are teaching. So if it's a fire plans class, you're getting a class from either a fire marshal or a fire protection engineer. If it's incident command, fire service leaders that have been chief officers that have managed incidents. So that's second. And the third is building a network of peers from across the country, if not internationally.
So if we're trying to hit that person that hasn't come to the fire academy yet, let's go through I think honestly, after experiencing the fire officer and leadership symposium, I would say that's the start, but that's my only experience so far. There's also a woman's weekend.
Women's weekend, yep, in June. So Google Women's Weekend at the National Fire Academy. It's in the middle of June. It's a Saturday, Sunday. You know, we're working with women in fire. Last year, we had more than 250 women for the first ever Women's Weekend at the NFA. We want to make it bigger and better than last year. So last year, we offered, I believe, 8 classes, and they were all filled up. This year, we've added 12. So 12 different professional development opportunities. So just Google National Fire Academy Women's Weekend. There's no cost to you to come. We'll cover everything, but you buy your meals. And that's just one example of how we're working with our affinity partners. We have similar outreach efforts with Black Chief Officers, International Association of Black Professional Firefighters. We're also doing the same thing with National Native American Fire Chiefs. We're bringing 2-day classes into their fire officer development program that they've set up. And starting similar discussions with National Association of Hispanic Firefighters. And if you ask me why, my answer is straight up. The National Fire Academy landscape very much looks white male. And what we want to make sure is that all of our fire service members, career volunteer, Black, white, Hispanic, know that the National Fire Academy is here for them. So we're doing deliberate outreach. But even on Women's Weekend, men are able to come. And last year, we had a number of men attend, and they had a blast because it added to the richness of the discussion. So again, there's no reason not to come other than you're busy. And what we also are very honest about is that, you know, people have to make time for them and their families too. So, you know, we stress that, and you heard that over the weekend. It's that that work-life balance or life-work balance. So make sure you take time for you and your family, because it can't just be all fire and EMS related.
Yep. And that's the other part about the relationships, is because you could talk about those other sides, you know, like how do you create balance? And I think actually, if I were to say add anything next year to the executive leader symposium would be that, because remember we had a Chiefs panel up there and all four of those successful Chiefs said, that's the one thing I need more help on, you know?
Yes.
Which was great, because you were asking us, what else do we want to hear? What else do you guys want to see? Now, you had a great committee, which I was fortunate enough, I sat behind and watched you, and it's just happened to be where we were, and had some great conversations with them. And they, you know, so they set up for this leadership symposium, they set up the curriculum, they reach out to their network, who do you want to see? But they were very much embedded with everyone asking about evaluations. What else are we missing? What else can we do? It's great to see, because that's what you're speaking about with leadership, right? And I think that's a reflection of you, just by knowing you and being around you and talking to people. I tried to find someone to say something bad about you, but nobody does. So
I can give you a list, Sam.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll do it after.
Okay.
But I'll tell you, your passion, like I said, you had that smile the entire weekend, man. And I think that's the other part about it. And so did the whole committee. I remember people when I said, I'm going to try to get Eric's on this podcast. And I can't remember. There's so many people I met. He just started smiling and he's like, that's great. Everybody needs to come here, man. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Like, why are you thanking me? You guys set this up. You know, I mean, where is that? The passion for the NFA came because you were there, but like, it's gotta be tiring, man. You were on all weekend and then you're setting up for another one. You know, like, where are you getting this drive?
Well, I think the drive is that I have seen organizations that do not support professional development or training. Right. So, I also know on a daily basis, right outside my office window, is a reminder of a commitment that we make whenever a firefighter dies in the line of duty, and that is to never forget. I believe how we never forget and honor them is by learning and continuing to learn about what can we do to prevent, to mitigate firefighter line of duty deaths. So the different things that we offer, so whether it's fire codes to make sure buildings are up to standards so that they don't collapse when firefighters go in there. It's incident management, making sure our officers, current and future, are learning how to set up an incident properly so that firefighters rolling in have a competent fire service officer giving direction. The same is true with our leadership classes. So I see the benefit of what we offer, and the fact that it's free of charge means that there's really no reason to say I can't come, other than you either don't have the time or you just can't make it. But that's the drive, right? I know through training, we could make organizations better. We can make people better. And that's the commitment I have. And that's why really for 30 plus years, I've been involved in a training arena, because I have seen incidents where people haven't been trained for what they've been asked to do. We've read line of duty death reports where we've seen incidents where people weren't trained for the task that they've been assigned to. So that's the passion. I love coming to work every day. I work with an amazing group of people on our campus who share that same passion. But, you know, it's federal government tax dollars at work. So that's what we do. We're here to support the students. That's our whole focus, is the students coming to our classes.
The Fire Store, equipping protectors with passion. Every decision we make as a company is about you, our customer. We wouldn't be where we are today without you. And we don't take that lightly. We understand that having the right gear can mean the difference between life and death. Our goal is to get you the gear you need, when you need it, at prices you can afford. Visit us at thefirestore.com for everything but the truck. And shop our family of brands, including Streamlight, MSA, Lion, Fleer, and more. Now let's get back to the show.
I want to get back to the campus.
Yeah.
One of the things, we have the memorial there.
Yeah.
We have the memorial wall for fallen firefighters. You have the bricks all the way around the campus. We have the 9/11 memorial. I'm trying to think of everything that I've seen. You know, like, and you said, you look outside and you see all of these. I mean, and they still get to you. And we were talking off camera a little bit about how can that not motivate you?
Sure.
You are doing a lot of renovations to the campus. You're doing a lot of renovations to the programming because of what those stand for. And I think right there, you get on campus, you feel all of that, you see all that, and you can't help but think, I need to get a little bit better for these individuals. Now, I know you're also very critical and hard on yourself and want to continually get better. So what are you working on? And you know, like, I guess, what are your hot spots right now where you see we need to get better at this at the NFA because we need to get better at that in the fire service. What are your passions towards improvement? Where is that going?
Yeah, so let me split that up in a couple of different topics. One is let's talk about infrastructure. With some of our buildings on campus pre-Civil War, many of them over 100 years of age, deferred maintenance is a big issue for our facilities director, which is slate roofs need to be replaced, making sure everything is current and relevant. We just can't, screw things in the walls. It's historic. We maintain it under historic preservation. But our facilities staff does an amazing job taking care of the campus inside and outside. One of the things that you mentioned was our fitness center. We know that our fitness center needs to be upgraded. What we do now is okay, but it's not what you would expect in 2024 from the nation's Fire and Emergency Services Training Academy. So we have worked on some requests through funding to get a new fitness, wellness, resilience center, because it's not just cardio and lifting weights. We also want to have some quiet rooms for people that might want to do meditation, do some yoga. So that is on the horizon of something we need to replace on campus. Because again, what we have has been okay, but not what we should have for 2024. We should be leading our country in the health and wellness arena. And I know you and a number of other folks at the conference said, what about getting the classes involved in working out and doing things like that? So, we do have some classes to do that. We had a class actually last month that had a morning yoga session every day. And most of the members of the class went to that. But that's one of those things. On the curriculum side is making sure we stay not only current and relevant, but also that we're staying up with what the fire and rescue service needs. So we obviously are leaning a lot more into wildfire than ever before, wild and urban interface. So that's an area for us to have growth. But we also have backlogs. And where we have backlogs is, I'll cover three of them. Incident management, our simulation lab is fantastic. We bring in fantastic instructors that work through scenarios with our current and future fire ground leaders, but we have backlogs there. So we want to offer more classes. But again, that's time, money, people, right? The same is true for our fire investigations program. We have an amazing partnership with the ATF. We have fire investigators and chemists and attorneys from ATF to come in and blend in with our staff for our fire investigations classes, which are offered for both law enforcement and fire investigators. And it's hands-on scenario-based training. So we actually have a burn range where we burn structures every month. And then we have the investigators dig them out, figure out how the fire started. Then we clean them all up, refurnish them, refurbish them, and burn them again for the following month. So investigators are getting fresh investigations to do. And again, one of the few places in the country we do that. There's a 3-year waiting list for that class for people to get in. That's how popular it is. And the only way we're going to address that is by having more footprint. So again, time, money, people, but additional burn ranges so we could do more quality classes. And then the other one, as far as where we have backlogs, is in our executive fire officer program. I know you were at the symposium. A lot of the people that were sitting around you are graduates of the executive fire officer program. So that used to be a 4-year program, and now we've compressed it into 2 years through doing things online. But we only have the ability to run 150 students per cohort through the executive fire officer class. So to give you an idea, on January 1st, we announced applications for the next cohort. You heard a lot of mention about this while you were with us. We said we would accept applications until February, the middle of February somewhere, or until we hit 500. We hit 500 applications within 15 days. So we had 500 applications within 15 days of that window being open, and we are only take 150, which means those other people were not able to come to the NFA Executive Fire Officer Program. So again, we've been working on resource requests to get more money for time, money, people to add to that Executive Fire Officer Program. So those are just those things we're working on. The other thing I would add is making sure our 2-day classes on and off campus are also refreshed, because that's how I got to the NFA. I know that those 2-day classes are, if you will, the front display case of the National Fire Academy. People get that class somewhere locally. You may have gone to an NFA class locally and you go, man, if this 2-day class is this good, I can't wait to get onto campus and take a 1-week or 2-week class, right? So they're kind of gateways, but also it's our front window. And we also know, based on the pandemic, we are doing more in the virtual world than ever before. But we're also very realistic, and I get this, not everything is virtual compatible. And that's not a knock on our discussion here, but you know, what you get virtually is very different than what you get in person. So we're gonna be in both of those areas, you know, staying virtual in some places where it makes sense, staying in 2-day classes off campus, 6-day classes, but also having those resident classes that we can't replicate. So keeping all those things moving.
Yeah, you don't like to turn people down. I know you don't. You wanna try to find, you know, if they're gonna put forth the effort to apply, you know, you don't wanna turn them down. So I, you know, and I love the passion. I do wanna talk about, so some people do have complaints when they come to, you know, the campus, and you had a list there. I wanna address it. But just for those people, kind of to give a snapshot. So I arrived in the airport. The shuttle, I registered online. The shuttle said, we'll pick you up at BWI at 7 o'clock outside of door 16. So you find door 16, and there right away, there's about 16, 17 firefighters there.
Big Blue waited for you, right?
Yeah. So that's the thing, is we were all, like, a lot of us were there for the first time. And I was kind of thinking, like, well, what kind of shuttle, you know, what's the shuttle look like? Right. So these are some of the things that people would probably, you know, I don't think they're going to talk themselves out of going, but this is part of the cool part of the experience. So you're waiting there, and all of a sudden this big FEMA bus, you know, coach bus comes up. I go, I think that's our ride. And you get on, and people are tired. Some people knew each other, but you can kind of get a sense, like, this is pretty cool. You get onto base. It's a federal base. So of course, no firearms, no alcohol, no drugs. And the command post is there, and they come up very, very nice. Everybody is very nice, but you kind of start to get, okay, this is good stuff. This is serious. Everyone registers. Nobody's got a platinum number, so there's no special line. So I'm in, you know, you got a chief next to, you know, firefighter, paramedic. Chiefs are staying in the same barracks as, you know, firefighters are. Hey, by the way, I got like 200. You know, I got the corner room with the. It was awesome, by the way.
Yeah, so you had a window, Mountain View.
Yeah. So if that was. Thank you. If I got a little bit in there, that's okay. But like, everybody's room was the same kind of, and you go to the mess hall, and it's kind of like lunch. Like, the lunch lady is there, and everybody's super nice and excited to be there. And they love to watch someone go through it the first time. Like, I remember they're like, hey, first time, yeah, grab a tray. Don't forget your glass, man. So I felt like I'm back in high school, middle school, and people just sat down. I sat down next to people I've never met before. I mean, next thing I know, they're my friend, you know? But it's all part of the experience, and it didn't matter what level, what experience you've had, where you came from, but you're seeing this mesh. And a lot of people kind of knew each other from other things, but you look around the room, right? And you're smiling the whole time because you see it. You're seeing that's a new relationship started. You know, I mentioned Chief Muncy. Chief Muncy sat next to me, and I'm talking to a chief from Belvedere, Illinois, that just went through an EMS conversion. And I left them there. They just sat and bonded for that entire time. And to me, that's just part of this great experience, you know. And you do have a little bit of butterflies in your stomach. You're like, hey, I'm a new student. But you know what? That's an awesome feeling, because, you know, growth is happening from that.
Yes.
And so you got the mess hall, then you go to the auditorium, and there are some unbelievable speakers there. You can't help but learn something. And so just going back, like, you get that little butterfly in. But I do want to talk about, okay, you know, people know they're going to get world-class training, but there are some complaints. What were the top 5 complaint lists here? We'll kind of make this a little more comical now.
Yeah. So, I call them first world issues.
Yes.
But if the training is as good as it is, which I hope that it is for each of our classes, right? Because we look at, as part of our QAQI, we review each of the surveys that we receive. And then also, some people may not know this, but we actually survey the agencies that send students months after they've been on campus to see if they've applied what they learned, right? And we report that to Congress each year through the Government Performance Reporting Act, GPRA. But the complaints that I see are the first world issue complaints. The first one I call the Three Bears complaint, and this applies to our dorm rooms. And that the Three Bears is, this mattress is too hard, this mattress is too soft, this mattress is just right. So we'll never get tired of that. The other one is that we do have occasionally the ice cream machine being out of service.
Forbid, right?
That does happen, but there's a new one on order for more than $24,000 to replace the one that is having issues. And then tied in with the ice cream machine, and this again is a tragic event that happens every so often, we will run out of the accoutrements that go with the ice cream. So we may run out of sprinkles or jimmies or chocolate chips, but that will stop the campus in its tracks because that becomes an issue. And like I tell our students when they bring that up, and I go, I'm sorry about the ice cream machine, but next time you come back, how about if you come for the training? And then they usually kind of just laugh like you did, which is, okay, I get it. So that's kind of where we're at. And then the last two complaints are the temperature of the indoor pool either being too cold or just right. And, you know, it is what it is. It's an indoor pool. And that's all part of our fitness program. So a lot of people do actually come and get laps in early or late at night. So hoping you took advantage of that. No, you couldn't because the pool was down for maintenance.
Pool was down for maintenance.
Yep. And then the fifth complaint, which is, and you can't make this up, is the quality of our toilet paper. You know, one of the students in their post-class evaluation wrote down, I can't thank you enough for the exfoliating toilet paper that you're buying on campus. And again, if that's the biggest issue, we're okay.
You know what though? That student was listening because they took a problem and they turned it around and they made it into a compliment. That's a very optimistic mindset. You know, the ice cream machine was down because I unplugged it last time I was there. I'm kidding. But, right. So those are the complaints that you have, which means you're doing a damn good job with the training. And I'm so happy that you came in because I want to tell you that I've learned so much just from the 2 days. I'm hooked. I actually just had a conversation with someone on my department who is signing up right now for a class. My challenge to anyone listening right now is go to the National Fire Academy's website, and we'll leave a link in the show notes.
Sure.
And look at that list. So if we can get from this program 100 people signing up for these programs, if we can get another 1,000 or 2,000 to that campus every single year, we're going to help with your mission to get everybody out there. But I guarantee if you're stuck in a rut with your career, this will get you through that. 100% honest, like it's, you can't get more charged up than what you do by going over there. And I think that's, again, your testament to what you're doing, Eric. And I can't thank you enough for setting that message out. I'm on your LinkedIn and I saw it, I clicked it and I said, you know what? I'm off those days. I'm going to do this. Thank God I did. So appreciate you being here, but you're not off the hook yet. We're going to talk, we got a couple hot seat questions for you that we always ask.
You know, Sam, I'm going to add this before you give me hot seat. But, you know, our mission is to support you and your mission, right? So, you know, our job is to help you be a better leader, a better fire examiner, right? A better incident commander. So we're part of your professional development system.
Right. And you take that. You want to know. And you know, right, like there are chiefs from all over the world. And you asked me, you're like, how was your experience, man? What are you doing? Hey, did you do this? Did you see this? You know, but I saw you have that same conversation with anybody. Like I said, that was your passion. And that's why it was just so fun to watch somebody who's that passionate there to see all these interactions. And I tell you, my other goal is that I do not want an available seat for next year's leadership. I think we need to fill that. There's no reason why, like you said, this is a great way to get people started, get their feet wet. Same thing. How many more spots do you have for the women's leadership seminar?
We are up to 100 and we can go to 300. So I got 200 seats to fill.
All right, let's get people to that. Let's get people to, is the leadership symposium once a year, usually around April?
Once a year. So follow our social media and we'll announce what the dates are. It's usually the week after Christmas. So that Friday, Saturday, I'm sorry, not after Christmas, after Easter.
Yes.
It's always that Friday, Saturday after Easter. But you'll get the announcement out. And the other thing on that is you're also going to see a call for papers come out for, you know, people to submit their presentations and be part of the EFO symposium. So we always want to make sure it's fresh and current and addressing what the needs are of our fire and EMS leaders. Because for EFO symposium, you had some people like you that have never been on campus before that said, hey, this lineup looks great. We had other people that have been before that come back to recharge their battery, right? So they want to hear different topics. So we had science, we had, you know, recruitment or retention. We had the commissioner from the New York City Fire Department, you know, talking about what they're doing. We had Ellen Yarbrough, who is a school teacher and also a volunteer fire chief, talking about how do we connect with the kids, right, that are coming into the fire service, the youth, and everything in between. So a good chance to kind of get nuggets of information, but also to recharge your battery during the sessions, but also on the breaks and in an evening like you did on the van ride, right? You recharge your battery.
Yeah, Dean Alley, also great presentation. Yep. Chief Waldo, Chief Coy, yes. Your panel was great. I think that was probably very well received.
Yep.
You know, I think the only thing is that you run out of time.
We do.
For all these.
Yeah, we started off with Dr. Dan Madrakowski, right, from UL-FSRI. Leadership Lessons from the Lab. John Tippett, right, Chief, and Dr. Hezadeen Smith from Polk County, Florida, talking about his leadership philosophy. So just a solid start to finish. So the committee did a great job putting together that lineup. And, you know, I get to be the conductor, right? So making sure that train leaves the station right at 8 o'clock. And then we get done by 5 p.m. on Saturday, but just solid. And you're right. We could have went for another 2 days if we wanted to and still not covered everything.
Yeah. For me, you know, like John Tippett's 12 o'clock high. Now I got to go watch that movie. You know, Dina had some great books to say, hey, read this. The very first thing with UL and fire attack right away, you're riveted by, oh yeah, this does affect us,
right?
You know, I always mess up his name, but
Madrakowski.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. It was awesome. And, like I said, my goal is to make sure we publicize that it's free. Let's fill that up, man. If you're listening to this, tell your crew, hey, let's all go. It's free. So I'm with you on that. You're right. It's so much that it just gets you fired up. And I think you do that on purpose. So now I'm like, hey, I got to go back because I want to do this. Yeah. I got to do this. I didn't get a chance to go through Gettysburg. I wanted to do that as well. So
we did a staff ride with the EFO, IFC's EFO section did an optional staff ride this year with Chuck Burkell, who is a registered Gettysburg tour guide.
Yeah.
EFO coordinator for the NFA.
That's right. And you know, crews you can go on your own with that too. Like stay an extra day or afternoon. So there's just so many things that will recharge you. So let's try to get enough people there. Cause I know you're going to continually do what you're doing and make it, if you even can make it a little bit better. So, you know, I'm challenging the listeners, step up. If I can do it, anybody else can do it too. So speaking of challenges, I want to go hot seat questions. Are you ready? Just real
quick. I'm ready. Fire away.
Couple quick ones. What do you think the biggest challenge is facing the fire service today?
I would tie a few things together. Recruitment and retention and our leadership philosophies. And what I mean by that is we are bringing in a new generation of members, either career or volunteer, but in a lot of cases, we're trying to ask them to go through the same systems we went through 10, 20, 30 years ago. And we need leadership to kind of meet in the middle. And let's not lower the standards on what we expect those members to be able to perform, but let's maybe look at different ways to do things to get them the training that they need. And I think that makes sense, right? All of us, as we grew up in the fire service, and I think you heard me mention this when I gave my welcome, but you know, more than once at the recruit school, I was told, Gablix, you're going to ruin the fire service, right? By somebody at the training ground. And I'm sure everybody has heard that, but yet here I am 30 years later, still in it. And I think I turned out okay. Did I learn lessons along the way? Yes. Did I have mentors along the way that helped me? Yes. Did I also have people that I work with that really shouldn't have been in the fire service? Yeah. Right. So we all have those people, but, you know, making sure that we are kind of not bend, but don't break, right? The standard is the standard. You need to throw a ladder. You need to know how to pull a hose. You need to do these things, but also we just have to realize that, you know, and thankfully or unthankfully because of this, right, to technology now, people can't leave these alone. So if you're not willing to provide them with that knowledge, that information, they're going to go to the internet and they're going to Google things, which may not be the right way to do it and maybe totally opposite of what you want to do. So I think that recruitment and retention ties into our leadership philosophies. You know, we still want a culture of safety. That should always be paramount, non-negotiable, but how we get people there needs to change. And I've seen that, right? Some people say, look, if people don't want to go through this, they're not going to work here. That's great. If you're fortunate enough to do that, but other organizations have said, look, let's kind of bend, but not break. And let's still have a standard, but let's bring people on board.
Yeah. And I think that was also a theme about, well, we need to train a little bit differently, maybe. Yes. So if somebody doesn't know what a Phillips head screwdriver is, well, let's teach them. Cause I didn't know how to use Google Maps at one point and they did.
Yeah.
Right. Like there's value there. There's a mission to serve. It may not be the traditional mission that, you know, the traditional way, but that doesn't make it wrong. We just, and that was a big part of the theme was communication,
communication.
Yeah. I think you saw that addressed in the leadership symposium. How about you personally? What's the biggest challenge, you know, you face and actually what's one that you've overcome recently?
Well, I would say operationally, one of the things that I caught early with really the status of the fire service with recruitment or retention, with staffing challenges, you know, we used to only allow people to apply for National Fire Academy 6 months at a time. So we went from 2 6-month windows to a quarterly system we just implemented in January. So the feedback from our stakeholders was like, look, you're asking me to apply for a class now that won't happen until 7 months from now. My schedule will change a number of times before that. I don't know if I'm even going to be able to come. So one of the things we did is we moved to a quarterly system with our admissions team. That's worked out really well. We're getting really good feedback, both internally, externally. But it's that day-to-day keeping your ear to the pavement on what's going on. The same with courses that we need to update, making sure our materials are current. You know, those are the kind of the day-to-day things. I think operationally, from a personnel standpoint, is we're in a beautiful area of Emmitsburg, Maryland, right? We're in the country, right on the Mason-Dixon line, 15 minutes south of Gettysburg, but not everybody wants to move to Emmitsburg, Maryland, right? So when we're looking to fill positions for full-time staff, we struggle to get people that want to come out to the country to work for us. So there's not much I could do. We're not going to move the campus. I know that. You know, I've had some pretty honest discussions with some talented folks that have applied, and they go, well, we think you should make this a virtual position. And I've said, look, I could make it a virtual position, but then who's going to be here for the students that are in your class? So, you know, not everything is virtual. And you know, we do what we can to bend, you know, and accommodate telework. So if there's no students on campus, then we don't require those training specialists to be on campus every day. They could work from home. But again, you know, expectation is as a training organization that you're there when the students are there, because that's why we exist. So that's an operational challenge from the HR side. Yeah. And then the third one is just the reality of the federal budget, right? There's not enough money to go around to do everything that needs to be done. I realize that while the NFA is important to me and our team, we're not the only game in town, right? Secret Service has budget requests. FEMA has budget requests. Other federal partners have budget requests. And there's only so much money coming in to do what needs to happen. And that's the same as our local fire chiefs are dealing with, right? So towns, cities, counties, there's only so much money to do everything. So you make decisions.
How about you personally? What's your biggest challenge personally?
Personally is taking time away from the office. So I fit in with that panel here. My wife and I, we've actually blocked out a number of weeks that I'm not going to be at work. So my leadership team is going to step up and cover that. Will I have my device with me? Probably. But will I be doing the day-to-day stuff like I do now? No, because my role, much like a fire chief, much like a city manager, it's kind of 24/7, 365, because having students on campus every day of the week, things happen at night. So if a student has to be transported to the hospital, I'd like to know about it. If it's not serious, you know, we're not going to go. But if it's somebody that's hospitalized for something, you know, we'll go to the hospital and make sure they're okay. We got to take care of our students. And that's what we do. But unplugging every so often is a goal. And this year, I've actually blocked out some weeks. So that's my weakness.
So the work-life balance was kind of, I think, a big theme too, like you said, for you personally. Who's the biggest influence in your life?
Well, I mean, I'll go back and I'll say probably the biggest influence was my mom and dad. So people that know me well know my background, but I'll share it with you and the listeners. My first name has an S on the end of it, so it's Eriks. If you were pronouncing in Latvian, which is my background, I'm a first generation Latvian, it's Addicks, so there's an E on it. Both my mom and dad came to the United States during World War II. So both of them with their families were in Latvia during the war. My mom tells a story. She remembered when the U.S. Army pulled up to their house and knocked on the door and said, you have 24 hours to pack and you're leaving tomorrow because the war is coming this way. They went through Germany. They stayed there for a number of years until they were sponsored to the United States. So my mom finished high school here. My dad came to the United States as a laborer for a farm. A number of months after he was here working as a laborer, he got drafted and he went to the Korean War. So he got his citizenship actually by being a combat engineer in the U.S. Army. Then he went to college through the GI Bill. So both of them, you know, came to the United States, didn't speak a lick of English. People helped them out. And one of the things that my parents always instilled in myself, my brother and my sister, all three of us are in public service, was to do things to help others. People helped us when we came to the United States. How can we help others that are out there? So those are probably the two biggest influencers in my life.
Wow. And we complain because the ice cream machine doesn't have sprinkles and your parents went through that, right? Like talk about perspective sometimes. And I think you know, that goes back to, like, you get perspective when you're on that campus. You're like, okay, perspective is, these are firefighters that don't get to do what I do. And if I can, right? Like, and same thing with your parents, right?
Yeah. And Sam, you're right, right? So first generation Latvian. So I could speak, read, and write Latvian. So I'm proud of that. You know, I'm a member of the Latvian society. So we keep that culture alive. But when you go to the issues, and, you know, I've had a number of mentors over the years in different agencies that I've worked with. But here's one of the things that I do as I mentor our new leaders right now, and even our employees, which is, let's just take check of where we are today. Do you have a roof over your house? Do you have a roof over your head? Do you have food in your refrigerator? Do you have a job? And do you have benefits? And if answer all four of those is yes, then you're doing better than somebody else in your neighborhood. Right. So we often, you know, do we want to make more money? Do we want some more days off? Do we want this? Yes. But, you know, how many people don't have a roof over their house? How many people don't know where their next meal is coming from, or their kids are getting a book, you know, a backpack at the end of the day on Friday to make sure they have enough food to get through the weekend until they come back to school? You know, are we getting income? Are we getting paid? And do we have benefits? You know, how many people don't have the ability to go get a filling filled in their teeth, mm-hmm. or, you know, my knee hurts, but I don't have benefits. I can't afford to go to the doctor. We're very fortunate in public safety. And sometimes you have to just kind of reflect and say, you know what? People do have it a lot worse than I do.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And your parents are a great example of a reality check, right? You know, it's okay to strive to be better, but we really need to also take a step back and be grateful for what we got.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Hence the theme of this whole podcast, Better Every Shift. So how are you working to be better?
Better by delegating more. So I have a fairly new leadership team in National Fire Academy. Over the 4 years that I've been there, we've had a lot of seasoned employees that have done great work retire. Believe it or not, we have some employees at the campus that have been federal employees for 50 plus years. So we're seeing people that have been with us for 30, 40 years that retire, and you know, good luck, enjoy your retirement, but also realizing their institutional knowledge leaves with them. So we're losing that history. So how do we build that up? So again, reflecting and representing and respecting the workforce, building that culture where, you know, you can have fun at work. And we kind of call it on stage, off stage. On stage is in front of the classrooms, right, working with our students. But behind the scenes, you know, we can have fun at work. We still do important work, and we can have fun and you know, kind of drop our guard a little bit. But also making sure our employees are not losing any leave, making time for them. We have a number of folks who have had health challenges, or their parents have had health challenges. My rule of thumb is family first. If you have an issue at home, go to home, right? Because you're not going to be worrying about work if you're worrying about your mom or your dad or your sister or your daughter that's in the hospital or going for medical tests. Go, you know, we'll give you leave. Just take care of that, and we'll cover for you at work. So really just taking care of myself, making more time, but delegating our staff. So they're learning also that family first model. But also holding people accountable, because, you know, we do have expectations of the workplace, just like any place else does. And while we can have fun at work, it is a place of employment, right? So it's a workplace with rules, and we need to respect those. But just, you know, getting people, our managers trained up, getting new staff on board and getting them trained up. And we've got a great group of people that have been with us. Some are retiring, as I mentioned, but new people jumping in that have that same passion. And then really feeding off of the energy from the classes, because, you know, you can get caught up in social media, and it's not a dig on any of the platforms out there. But sometimes we see people in our industry making bad decisions that makes us look bad. You know, we see organizations like, oh my gosh, who would ever want to work there, right? I mean, and those kind of feed that media churn that we have. But, you know, what really recharges me is sitting in a classroom on a Friday morning when our students are giving presentations about something that they're working on in their organization, or a leadership thing that they've learned with us, and they're presenting back. And you go, you know what? The future of the fire service is bright and healthy. We have amazing people that have a passion for serving our communities and serving the organizations and learning how to be better leaders. And we're in a good place. So I have to remember to put those bad things aside. And that's the exception, not the norm. We have people in this country that really care, both career and volunteer, about providing amazing service to their organizations. And we're pretty excited.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like, you just summarized the entire fire service from station life to what we really face as far as challenges. I think the biggest challenge is ourselves sometimes,
yes.
Right? Like getting out of our own way, and staying positive and just getting back to providing service, which is what you're doing out there. And I'll tell you, you're doing a hell of a job because I'm hooked and I want other people to experience what I experienced. So I appreciate the time. So please, everybody, accept my challenge and Eric's challenge to get out there, say hi, shake his hand. He will give you any insight and answer any questions to help your experience. But I can't speak high enough, obviously, of what it did to me and helped recharge me. And I try to be positive, and now I'm super positive. So please take our challenge. Let's get those classes full. Go to the website. We'll, again, link to those. The other thing we want to do is if you have questions for Eric's or for us on the show, you can email us at bettereveryshift@firerescue1.com. If you need to get in touch with Eric's, we'll make that happen. Is that okay to do?
Like, my email's on the internet, so you can shoot me a message direct.
Perfect. Yeah. Google that or use the links. Look for classes. And if there's something that you think should be there, Eric's wants to hear about that as well, correct?
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. Yep.
Well, yeah. Again, thank you for your time. Thanks for your passion. If you're listening to this, I highly suggest you go to the Fire Rescue One page, the Better Every Shift page, or to our YouTube channel, because you can see the passion in Eric's eyes and just, the smile that he gets when someone talks about what he's doing and just what he's working for and towards. And that's the main thing. You know, we're all about getting better. As Eric said, it's okay to strive to be better, but have some gratitude. Make sure that you take time for yourself, which is what he's working on. And I think what a lot of leaders are working on, communicate with each other, get out to the NFA, experience it, and get that feeling back. If you've lost it, or if you're looking for a recharge, it's the place to go and be. Because again, it's all about being better. It's all about doing something, learning something, and sharing something to make you and those around you better every shift. Thanks for listening, everybody.